I think so.
I'm gonna just work the phone line a moment here. I think we won't start before that clock says six. Do we have Sue on the line?
Yeah, hi, Sue, I'm here.
Excellent. Okay, we'll talk about that as we get started. So hang on. Hopefully everybody will remember their microphones tonight.
We just had, we had to rearrange a little bit because we have so few people.
Kidding.
Okay. I know, I usually do sit by you, don't I?
Okay, I'd like to go ahead and call to order the meeting of the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board. I understand that before we even call the roll or look at minutes, we have a member participating by phone. And Stephanie, do we need to do any kind of approval agreement or anything on that status or just acknowledge it?
You all have to agree.
Okay, so as the first action we'll take after we call the roll is to, for those who are physically present, we'll entertain a motion to accept the participation of one of our members by telephone this evening. So with that, let's go ahead and call the roll, please.
Joyce Still. Phil Krein.
Here.
Deb Rouge.
Here.
Mike Smith.
Here.
Sue Suter.
Here.
Okay, thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge that Gary Maxwell and Sam Shore, our county board representatives, are participating this evening. Okay, with that, I'd like to entertain a motion to accept the participation of Sue Suter by telephone.
So moved.
Okay, I'll take yours as the motion, yours as the second. Deb's the second. Those in favor, please say aye. Any objections? All right, then we'll proceed. And Sue, we're grateful to have you join us this way.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Okay, now the only caveat is we'll have to make sure enough microphones are kept off so that your phone can be live into the system. And if you have something to say, you'll have to just jump in and interrupt us violently to make sure we know that you're wanting to speak.
Okay.
All right, any changes or additions to this evening's agenda? Okay, hearing none, I will assume that the agenda is approved as presented. We now have our time for citizen input, public participation. Later, of course, we'll have our agency information. So do we have anyone who would like to provide citizen input, please? Going once? Okay, thank you. I see we have plenty of agency participants. I'm sure we'll get to that. Any input from the Mental Health Board this evening? and we'll finish anything we need to.
Their retreat event is scheduled for October 27th in this room from 8:30 till noon-ish, I think. And you are all welcome to attend that.
That's Tuesday, if I remember right. All right, at this point, we need to go through our minutes. Any corrections or changes to the minutes as presented in the packet? Hearing none, I'd like a motion to approve the minutes. Okay, Deb moves. Second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion, any issues? Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. The minutes are approved. The next item is President's comments. First thing, I want to remind you of our board's retreat, which will be next Wednesday, the 28th. We've scheduled 8:30 to 12:30. Right, we've actually reserved the space until 1:00. It will be here. And certainly we're looking forward to that. Members have received the booklet with the agenda and some of the preliminary items for that, so please take a look at that. I also, we'll hear later about the Disability Expo. I was able to attend and gave some opening remarks, and actually there were some very interesting aspects of that, especially related to Employment First, but we'll hear more about that later from Barb Bresner and some of the other folks. And I'm particularly interested in the new LEAP program that we heard about, the Leadership and Employment Opportunities for Everyone, and I know that we'll hear some of that during the agency information. I want to acknowledge that Peter Tracy is going to be out for a while because of an accident and an injury, which was not minor, but I have spoken to him at least by email, so he's coming along slowly. I believe he's going to be able to participate in the retreat by telephone. He's certainly hoping to be in a position to be able to do that by then, but he won't be here in person. It will take him some time to recover. Lynn, staff report update?
Certainly, if you have questions about the staff report, ask me, but I wanted to tell you this is a historic occasion and may never ever happen again, but I owe the state of Illinois an apology because I have been very critical lately about the impact not only of the budget impasse, but also of their critically understaffed human service agencies, especially the Division of DD. And I've been saying things like the state is failing to take advantage of opportunities that the federal government is making available for demonstration programs and planning grants. And I was wrong. They did. The state of Illinois was awarded almost $1 million from HHS. It's a planning grant for certified community behavioral health clinics, which is not directly relevant to this work, but it will be indirectly relevant. Some of my colleagues at the National Association wonder why the federal government is taking this step, moving to community behavioral health clinics, instead of taking the current model that they've invested in, which is the federally qualifying health clinics, and integrating that to include behavioral health care. Instead, they're doing this first, and I think everyone believes that they will end up integrating the two models. But this is just a planning grant. It's just $987,000, so who knows if it will even touch Champaign County. But I just wanted to say they did take advantage of an opportunity, and so I was wrong.
Okay, and you remind me that perhaps I should bring up that there was a very interesting court decision that came out this week about the Murray Center. And I think that the federal judge in that case was let's put it this way. The judge has the same kind of take that we've been discussing about Olmstead and some of the other court cases and the emphasis on community integration, and had a lot of, let's just say, discouraging things to say to the plaintiffs in that case, really coming down on the defendant's side. And I would encourage you, I'm not going to try and summarize that or dictate it, but you know, any of you who are interested might go out and take a look at that. It's actually fairly important. And I think, you know, we'll hear about some of this in our retreat, but I think some of the implications of that will have impact in Illinois over the coming months. Okay, at this point then, let's go ahead and invite agency information. Anybody would like to get us started reporting, please?
I'll get it started. Jennifer Knapp from Community Choices. So first, wanted to just to give a bit of an official report of the update on Employment First. And we'll be talking at the beginning of the retreat next week. But DSC and Community Choices, the first step is that we have selected what we are calling champions. So these are businesses that are already employing individuals with disabilities and doing an excellent job at providing natural supports for them. So the two that we selected were Planet Fitness and Rockwell Automation. So those were both businesses were recognized at the expo on Saturday as being champions. We also unveiled the new logo and are calling the certification LEAP, which is Leaders in Employing All People. So we continue to work on the collaboration and are in the final stages of developing the training and have started to outline businesses that we want to have do the initial rounds of training. So it's been exciting times, and we are continuing to work on it. And like I said, we'll have a little more information for you next Wednesday. So I wanted to give you an update on all of those activities. And then in addition, for Community Choices, we've been attending several trainings as of late, and people who are really pushing our thinking, especially people from Georgia and Cincinnati and actually up in Chicago area. And there's actually one organization that might be worth just checking out. They are called Starfire, and we did a training through them. They're based in Cincinnati, and essentially a couple years ago they decided they wanted to stop doing any sort of group outings and day program. And so they're in the process of closing those and moving to a one person at a time sort of model. So they have individuals who are doing things like history reenactments and brewing beer and creating things like spoken word nights and all kinds of different things. Anyway, they have a bunch of videos on their website. So just kind of a something that we're thinking about, how do we implement some of those ideas here locally, but just an information. They have tons of videos on their website, so it's a good way to just see what they're doing. So thank you.
I did want to ask you something before you go away too much. I hope for those community leaders that there was a press release and that we tried to give them some good publicity.
Yes.
It was a nice program at the Disability Expo, but I don't see press here tonight. I'm not sure whether we had press there.
There was a press release sent out.
Okay, thanks.
So I'll keep you updated if we have any specific coverage.
All right, thank you. Other agencies? Okay, we have Dylan Boot from PACE.
My name is Dylan Boot. I've just announced at Jennifer as PACE workers.
My name is Dylan Boot. I'm from PACE, and I've asked Jennifer to repeat for me.
I just wanted to give a short update on my employment at PACE.
Just wanted to give you a short update on my program at PACE.
I now have huge support group of employees that I promised that I would.
I now have two support groups up and going that I promised I would.
One focuses on just individuals, skills, and philosophy.
One focuses on basic independent living skills and philosophy.
And the other is a job readiness group.
And the other is a job readiness group.
That will focus on preparing people that want to work and go out and find a job.
That will focus on preparing people who want to work to go out and find jobs.
Finally, just as assurance, I want to say that I am the significant ahead of all of the benchmarks put in place, and that I am trying to make good on the show of good faith that you give me.
Finally, I just want to note that I am significantly ahead of all of the benchmarks that were put in place, and just want to show the good faith effort towards the faith that you put in me.
Just one question. Can you give us a sense of roughly the number of people involved in support groups? I mean, we're not counting necessarily, but I just want to get an idea of scale.
Right now, I'm averaging between 4 and 6.
Right now, we're actively recruiting, but we have 4 to 6. Averaging 4 to 6 per group.
Thank you. All right, Dale.
Good evening. Sue, for your sake, Dale Morsey here, DSC, from DSC. I just wanted to give you an update. First of all, came in a couple weeks ago, Balk, Bureau of Accreditation Licensure, they do their surprise visits once in a while, and they came in to look at our DT program, and only the DT program this time, and I guess to brag a little bit, and it's particularly not on me, it's on Laura Bennett, the staff of the Developmental Training Program, and Ron, and all the Qs, out of 141 points, the program received 141 points. And so we're pretty pleased to get 100% score there. So doesn't mean they couldn't have caught something, maybe if they would have, but they didn't in all the records they reviewed. And so it was a really clean review, so we're pleased with that. So our reward for that was on Tuesday, DQM decides to do their surprise visit, the Bureau of Quality Management. And so Ron, they're really busy because they are looking at several of the programs. They're looking at DT, Ron's program, and so on, and all that. And so this is three individuals. They came in on Tuesday, and they won't do their extra review until Friday morning. And so they do a pretty thorough review, and seems to be going really, really well. They changed their process a little bit more. Instead of, they still try to find what you need to improve, but it's more of a try to help you out a little bit more. The process, I think, Jennifer's been. And it's a little bit, take a little of the teeth out of it now and really say, hey, what can you do to, if there is something you can prove that you can correct it there? And so it's a little bit more positive experience, and they're still learning because that's a big change for them. It really is. And so, and I don't mean that negatively, it's just it really is a big change, and so we're learning through that process. Secondly, I just want to let you know that we're very pleased. Jennifer Carlson, the director of our residential services, was recently awarded one of the 40 Under 40 awards for Champaign County, and so we're really, really proud of her. for getting that recognition. The next thing is we have four staff, Patty Walters, Danielle Matthews, Laura Bennett, and Annette Becker in Vermont right now. They'll be coming back. They're at the National Association for People for Supported Employment First training. And this is talking about specifically, they're there listening to five other states that have moved completely toward supported employment. And they're trying to, you know, can, many of those states are smaller, and so the transition was easier, and the rate's a lot higher. But what they're there to do is to learn about that, incorporate that somehow, joint employment first project, talk about how we can work with that. And also, as part of that joint project we have, is identifying experts that can come in and help us as we guide through that. So besides just learning, they're actually trying to identify people that they might also be able to bring here to help us as we go through that process. So I have only had brief reports from them because they're very involved there, but we'll learn more, and I'm sure you'll hear more about that in next month's meeting. And the final thing I just wanted to share with you in preparation for your meeting and your planning session next week is I really want to encourage, and you will hear more from me, you've heard me for 3 years talking to you about staff shortages, and I just wanted to talk to you about it in a little bit greater period and then talk to you about DSC. I went week before last to our state conference just for one day. I went particularly because of this, because we had some of these issues to come back to. So I was there that one day, and it was interesting, you know, as IARF was laying out his platform of the 7-8 most important things, staff turnover was one of the things, and by after the end of this discussion, it is definitely the number one thing on their list. And it was sort of interesting that many of the people in the Chicago area thought this was just a north issue and not a downstate issue, and it quickly became clear what was going on there. So to give you an idea, several organizations spoke up, but one organization that's very, very large, one of the largest in the state, has between 35 to 40% of his direct service providers in residential. This is a $23 million organization. Over 35% of his direct service staff positions are vacant. The lady that came and spoke with you a while back from Ray Graham and talked to you and everything, she has 500 and some direct service employees. She has 160 vacancies. And this went on and on. And then, so I'll talk to you about DSC in a second. They're in the Chicago area, and again, I don't want to imply that DSC is looking at this, but many organizations have already moved. You know, they bought on just like we have in the last few years, been downsizing all of our homes, going to single bedrooms, trying to get down to one, two, threes, and fours. Many of them are now having to make the decisions of taking those smaller homes and collapsing because they can't keep them safely staffed. So they're having to take their fours and make them back into sixes and eights because their choice is to either send people home or to keep them there, and they have to share the staffing. I know that's really backwards, folks, from where we're going, but the point being is I'm going to strongly encourage you that needs to be your highest priority. And I'm not talking about giving bonuses or you particularly funding that, because you can't. The issue is so great, you don't have the resources to fund it. What we need to do is politically get active, both as an associate, both as your staff and as a board, to work with other state associations and organizations like DSC and elements and stuff to make this a higher priority to get it changed. The target I'm pushing our state association to go toward is the minimum rate for a direct service provider should be $27,000, which is about $13.50. And I think the reason that's our easy mark is the state already approved that for home health workers a couple years ago. And they said that that's a mark. So it's, instead of looking at rates of going $1 an hour, $1.50, because if we get that, of course we would take it. But it's not going to solve our problem. We use all of our political wherewithal and it'll be done. So I'm going long, but I just really want you to be thinking about that, because I really don't think there's a higher priority as we move toward employment first or community living or smaller sites or apartments and all that stuff. If we don't deal with direct service and the quality level that we need to hire, applicants just aren't there. You're going to see, if you haven't already seen it, there's going to be commercials. We're trying all creative ways to try to get people hired. As far as there's a DSC commercial, there's going to be two of them. It's on Comcast. It's on several stations. Now, let me put just DSC's residential program alone, and I will end here. Of the 55 DSPs, we have 11 vacancies in DSPs alone. Our residential program at all, overall, when you take the people that take people to medical appointments, the two nurses are vacant. We have 16 of the 75 people in residential staff that are vacant right now. So we're heading toward 25%, and that's just residential alone. And so, you know, I've always told you that the thing that holds us back is we need to make sure as we serve people, we need to do it safely. And that's the concern that's happening around the state. So I hate to be Mr. Doom and Gloom, but I hope that you really think about that a lot and consider how you can do that. I have some ideas that I want to work with the state association and would like to work with that of how we can politically try to move this forward a little bit in Champaign County and then work with some other areas of the state, other legislators and stuff to get this, to make it a higher and not just a token thing, but something in how we can really bring some heat to it. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dale. And we'll open for questions in a moment. I did want to ask quickly, probably shouldn't ask this publicly, but to what extent can we actually leverage that rate that's already in place for the home health care worker and just say, you know what, you've agreed to this and this is what's going to have to happen and kind of demand it based on that without having to go through the same processes? Or do you have any sense of that?
Well, I think that that's where several of us need to sit down and talk about a strategy and talk about, particularly from the local area, and then I can work with, our state association to get another. So if we can get, let's say, a Scott Bennett's or pick one, and Carol Amitz, if we can get them to help put this toward their platform, explain to what needs to be done, and use that as our leverage, because what you always go back to is rates, and how do you compare rates? Rates is just going to eat us up. It's antiquated. They don't mean anything. Nothing's been done with them in 20 years, and they aren't based upon them. So we've got to use something that's a real mark. And a real mark is that they set, for people that are doing home health care with people with other types of disabilities, that the minimum rate that should be is $1,350. So we need to just keep beating that drum and say, our people are even as critically in need as the people that they're already serving. And that's why I think we just need to use that as our political base and get the politicians to buy into that premise and get away from the rate issue. It eventually becomes a rate issue, but use that as our premise of why we need to have people. You know, $27,000, nobody's going to get rich, but at least we're actually going to get a different applicant pool than we currently get. And, you know, people just can't live an effective wage without working two jobs.
Okay, thanks. Any questions or comments from the other board members? And something to add? Okay, Lynn?
I already started to talk to you a little bit about this, but I need to let you all know that our state association has just recently hired an association coordinator, and we talked about the importance of partnering with IARF right now on that and some other issues that, I mean, you have some very politically active members right here in this community. So she'll be coming to visit in a couple of weeks, and maybe we can talk about more specifics after that.
You know, things may not be happening in the budget, but politically, as people are putting out petitions and things like that, this is the time we need to be doing and getting to find out who our real champions in the political world are.
We're having our study session looking at things that are priorities for us. And I do believe that as a board, we should make this a very high priority to start really pushing on this particular issue. I know this is probably very little, but it's still something all of us can do. It's just letting the governor know, letting our representatives know that what exactly is happening to human beings. Because they are not doing their job. Not that I said it that way, but basically what I said was, look, you're not passing a budget. You need to pass a budget so that people get paid. But beyond that, you need to take a look at the people that are being served. And that's not happening at this point. So as we go forward, if we're looking at priorities as a board, this seems to me the number one priority. How can we fund services if we can't get people to work? I would not want to do the jobs that a lot of them do for $27,000 a year. We're not talking big money here. You know, and the state of Illinois spends more on their own issues than they do on that. So let's think about that and let's talk about it when we have our meeting. I think it's really important. And if anybody has any ideas on how to get this grassroots thing going, let me know. I'm happy to do it.
Well,
thanks.
I will tell you, I have a lot, and one of those will be how we get the self-advocates and the consumers that receive services and the DSPs. If we start with that three, we get a hell of a large group that I think can start a grassroots, because it affects them instead of us. And if we can show them how to lead themselves, I think we can get some things accomplished.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful. I'll hold on to that as we get into priorities. Deb?
Well, I just have a question. I don't know if Dale can answer this best, or maybe if Lynn has access to information. Is there a way to find average salaries for DSPs across the country?
We can give it to you. We can
get
to state. We can
get
to the state for sure.
Idea?
Yes, Braddock has it across the country, doesn't it? We can get, for sure, I know there's information on the state, and I think we can get more of that.
I think
that's
it would be really helpful to have, you know, to see what, just for comparison purposes, where we are in the mix, and I'm sure we're
way low, but
it would be good.
By the way, final thing before I go up, I did speak with Peter today and talked about his health and wished him well, and he said to thank all of you for thinking of him and stuff, but I also informed him of this. I didn't want you to think that, so he's very aware, he's heard it before, but I talked to him about some of the things at the state level, so he is aware that I was going to ask you to make sure you discuss this at your study session. So, thank you.
Related to, so all of the states do slightly different things with their Medicaid waivers, so there might be some variation that, and I'm sure if there's a report already, they've adjusted for that, but just I learned today that Texas is moving to lower its Medicaid rates based on 11 unnamed states with very low rates. So we've done some people in Texas a fine favor, too.
I'll avoid the temptation to respond to that. Any other agencies with information? All right, thank you very much. Next thing on the agenda is our financial report and claims. And unless there are questions, I'd like to have a motion to approve the claims. Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion? All right, calling for vote. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. At this point, we're up to new business. And I'd like to invite Chandra Somerville to give us a progress report about cultural and linguistic competence, please.
Thank you very much. Sue, can you hear me?
I can, Chandra. Okay. Yes.
Perfect. I have passed some information out to the board, and it's basically handouts that I wanted to provide to you as reference, and then I will actually give you some numbers, some clear-cut numbers. So the first one I would like for you to reference is I wanted you to see that cultural competence has not just started this year or 5 years ago with the system of care. I wanted to actually show you the timeline of where the mental health board first started, and then how the developmental disabilities board came on board. What has been unique about my position is that at first, when the mental health board did begin to consult about cultural competency and it being a part of the value of the developmental disabilities board as well as CCMHB, it was begin looking at it through just race and ethnicity and people not receiving mental health services. That was through the Surgeon General's report that was put out in 1999. From there has been lots and lots of research that has come where it's talking about there is a population who is not even being reached. We began to look at where the disparities are regarding African Americans and how they are getting diagnosed. They're receiving a diagnosis for autism when it's too late. So, which puts them on a juvenile justice or criminal justice track. We already know that the behavioral health system is fragmented. And so we begin to say, okay, what can we begin to do to begin to look at cultural competency on the developmental disability side? So if you notice, particularly what has been done, and I'm not going to bore you with all of those details, but I wanted you to note in 2009, when we began to actually fund it, what Peter wanted to do, his goal was to say, how can we make it more organizational and more systematic? Which is why they began to implement how we're going to look at plans in a more coordinated way. What I presented to you, you all actually have a copy of an actual plan. There are two of them. So the first one I would like for you to look at is Doing Good for the Community. Now, I took away the name just to protect them, but this is an actual organization that you all do fund. This is one of the fairly large ones. They have actually taken the time to look at how they will implement cultural competency, not just at the direct service level, but how they're going to look at it organizationally. So I so you can look at this. They actually have an action step. They actually have a time frame. They actually have accountability and benchmarks on how they will actually reach their goal. This was missing from cultural competency plans at the Mental Health Board as well as the Developmental Disabilities Board, because it was just a concept. So you all have a sample of another plan that just kind of is a paragraph. You should have two of them. One is the Good Family Organization. The other one is the Doing Good for the Community. The Good Family Organization plan just outlines just some of their thoughts, their values, but not necessarily talking about how they're going to conduct activities and show clear accountability. One of the things I don't think that I could have done a different job of is actually showing you how the reporting is happening. You all voted as boards to say, okay, we want this a part of the application. But to actually show you what is taking place, I wanted to actually show you, here is how agencies are reporting. So you have all of the organizations who have been given the same instructions, the same materials, and have been told clearly that we're looking for clear action steps, a clear time frame, persons responsible, benchmarks, and progress. The beauty of you all taking on this as a value, you all can help see it as a priority and help organizations see it to say, hey, we see the importance of not just having something in place where you're just going to get funding, but actually doing something. So the conversation that you all had earlier regarding staff turnover, a huge piece in staff turnover, and research goes to this, is when organizations are not culturally responsive, however that looks like, not meeting the needs for those particular staff people that you're serving, is when you're going to have high turnover. A lot of times that's done at the direct service level, because those are your positions where burnout is definitely in place, where there's a lot of work hours. You're taken away from your actual families. So what organizations begin to do was they begin to look at cultural competency, not just with race and ethnicity, but how they're going to relate it to all levels within their staff. So looking at Doing Good for the Community with their plan, I wanted you to note on the board level, one of the biggest things is, how are we going to fund training activities?
Lots of times that's not even incorporated into a budget. This particular organization, their board saw it as a value and said we're going to include it within our organization. Before I got in the position, there were several employees that did not even know that there was a cultural competency plan in place. Now organizations are aware that there is a place, and they also have provided mechanisms so that they can even involve themselves in the planning of it. So I wanted to provide that, provide you that information. Also for your just perusal, I wanted to provide you with just an article that was recently published about children of color of autism and how it's too little too late. I think about with the programs that we're currently funding, particularly with Head Start and the programs that are funded through DSC that look at when they're early so that you can get screening done early. Having training for those particular people who are screening, it's important that they not have certain biases that are being viewed, because that is where oftentimes there's a mistake that sometimes it gets happen. So what a particular organization has done was that they have begun putting cultural competency training and really looking at target specific populations for persons of color so that they can ensure that those biases are not present in the screening process. So I wanted to make sure that you are aware. But this is just some information regarding children of color and autism. So you have the timeline. You also have copies of the of a couple of plans of people who are actually doing the who are actually doing the plans that you're funding. If you don't mind passing this down. I wanted to actually show you the requirements now. We changed it from quarterly reporting to actually biannual reporting. So it's twice a year that organizations just are required to report on their progress. And so we have 8 developmental disabilities organizations that are funded, and all of them, except for one, reports like they're supposed to. This has improved over time. So I just wanted to let you know that the organizations have really worked hard. And one of the other things that have happened is that I've actually built relationships with the organizations on how to be more culturally responsive or how to begin to look at it from a perspective. I think that coming in relationally, it has helped. It's helped with the barrier of feeling like someone is coming down to force something, but really, how can we begin to work together in partnership so that we can serve all populations in a manner that is that reduces disparities? When you have your retreat, one of the things I'd like for you to consider is looking at the performance outcome measures, so that you can actually see what organizations and how they're serving all the different types of populations. One of the concerns is that it's not often reflected in the DD community as it is in the behavioral health community compared to our population in Champaign County. When you, as decision makers, have that before you, you can begin to just ask questions to say, okay, well, why aren't we serving a particular population, or why is it more? And a lot of it is definitely awareness and also willingness to even engage in services. But I also think that when decision makers are aware, I think Joyce said it very well. People in decision-making power need to understand these are humans. These are human beings. Unfortunately, there is a group of people who were not considered humans for a very long time. So we're kind of catching up to say, okay, these this group of people, they are people too. So we're kind of behind the eight ball, which is why we have diversity training, cultural competency training, to just begin getting more comfortable with the conversation and how it takes place. So I could really like go on and on, but Philip, he gave me two specific questions that he wanted to ask. And you wanted to know about where were the barriers, and then you also wanted to know about some of the progress. So I hope that I've provided you with just a baseline of information. And because it's just me, and I'm working with about 28 funded agencies, as well as other partnerships in the community, a lot of times I get behind the eight ball with getting certain reports out. And so the additional support that was provided and that I had when I was at the mental health board level was like a really great thing. Whereas now I do have support. I'm by myself, but I did have other colleagues that were able to provide that additional support.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the the brief version, and I will expand on one of the things that I asked you to talk about. My sense from what you just talked about is that we've made very substantial progress on the awareness issues, and people are getting serious about getting this into their plans and so forth. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And what has been nice about it is it's awareness within the organization. So they are starting to have committees. They're starting to make it a part of their daily life, not just, oh, let's think about it after the fact. They're thinking about it from the beginning strategically.
Okay. I think to the extent that we can document some of that, it'll add, you know, public value that we can present to people. I wanted to, you know, since you gave us that little article, I'm going to pick on autism just for a moment, because I know, for example, that we have autism teams in the various school districts. And my sense from the article is that a lot of times these are being caught when children are arriving at school. Are our teams in our districts, are they proactive? Are they getting trained? Are they able to help with screening, or are they strictly having to be reactive? And again, as you said, you end up with people in the justice system rather than in the care system.
I think that it really has to deal with, yes, they are being reactive, to answer your question, because there's so many challenges being presented at the same time. So when you think about a classroom size of 25 kindergartners, and 20 of them may have never been in daycare before, that's going to present a lot more challenges. So a lot of times they are being reactive. So I think, one, with the budget crisis in particular, you probably may not even have the funding to do it, which is why there are some systems and some supports that are even being put in place with training with teachers so that they can have some things to begin to look at. So training them to be more culturally aware and culturally responsive of, is it a behavioral issue or is it a developmental issue? And historically, for African Americans in particular and Latinos, because the communication style or the way that they even express themselves is different than people who may have had access to more things or access to particular services, or their families just have been aware they got proper prenatal care. And I mean, it even goes back to that. I think that there is more opportunity to say, or even target those people that know that they'll get what they need versus the person who may not have access to it.
And just to expand on that a little bit, some of you may remember long ago in the 50s and 60s when we had that supposed refrigerator mother issue, and autism was said to be a disease of educated people. It actually turned out to be the other way around. It was the educated people who were demanding that there's something wrong that needs to be dealt with. Third question, What about the rural areas in Champaign County? Do we have similar kinds of disparities, or is it much different? And
absolutely. So for rural communities, the areas of even how far you have to go to even access services has really been a challenge. And that was one of the things that I learned, where we had to, yes, deal with our urban community, but also look at the rural communities that may have to drive 20 miles just to get food, just to go to the grocery store. Imagine that, and then them not even having access to mental health or even services. And or they just may have their family members saying, okay, we're going to just have them here at home and just keep them at home and not even integrate or have them included with other communities. So, yes, that is definitely a challenge.
Anyone else on the board to open it up for other questions?
Just wanted to make the comment that I think that a lot of times in the school setting, we're still at the place where the diagnosis drives the service, too. So you have to have been engaged with medical professionals somewhere along the line before anything can really happen in the schools. And that, of course, is a big issue, too, for people.
So I can say, like, a year ago, I was here to kind of, like, tell you about the journey. I think now we're at a place where we can talk about steps to the action to say, okay, here is how we're going to look at things different. And also celebrate where you all have and how far you all have come as a part of this process when we begin to look at cultural competence in a more organizational capacity, not just looking at who's having a holiday celebration for African Americans or Latinos, or are we going to celebrate Cinco de Mayo? I mean, it's so much more than just an activity. It's really looking at it structurally. So the fact that you begin thinking about staff turnover as a problem in organizations because it's posing a safety, that is looking at things in a more culturally responsive way because you want to figure out how to retain your staff members, as well as serve and have staff members present of different cultural backgrounds who want to work and want to stay there and do not have to deal with the racism or the microaggressions that may be coming down because of the policies and procedures. Whole nother 2-hour presentation.
I want to point out that something has changed since you made that presentation a year ago, and it will also have an impact on the next discussion item, and that is that during the last year, person-centered planning went into the federal requirements for long-term supports and services funded by Medicaid, and one of the elements of person-centered planning is cultural responsiveness. So maybe there... Maybe we can see this as a partnership towards really firming up those practices. I think our larger agencies are working on person-centered planning processes through CQL and also through NSIL. Is that what it is? NSIL. So I think there's plenty of opportunity to work together to meet them. Those federal regulations are a floor, not an aspiration. And they're the law already.
Okay, thanks. As you notice, I've been trying to make sure that we have time for discussion and questions, and I can see that the clock, 7 o'clock hours, is probably never going to work for us. So I think we'll have to keep in mind that our meetings will have to have a little bit longer schedule as we go into the future. And I'm not going to cut things off unless everybody demands that we do that. Any other questions for Sean?
I just want to just again ask you to just go back and review the performance outcomes and really look at the demographics and how organizations and who they're actually serving, because that's an area that I don't think, I mean, we've paid some attention to it, but I don't know if we've actually really looked at it with eyes of being culturally responsive.
Well, I think as we're beyond the awareness issue and into the implementation, you know, trying to get good measures of effectiveness become increasingly important. So, yeah, absolutely appreciate that.
And we've had the, because the organizations have provided benchmarks to measure their process and their progress, when it becomes a policy is when it's like removed from the plan.
All right, thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, I want to move to the next item of new business, which is our initial draft of our allocation criteria for the coming year, starting here on page 12. I have had the chance to go through this with Peter and Lynn, and of course we don't have time to go through extensive discussion right now. I will take advantage of Joyce's earlier comment. It wouldn't necessarily be a priority for our agencies, but it would be for us, which would be up, therefore, in the section entitled Overarching Priorities. I'm going to work with Lynn and Peter to add things about rate structures and specifically about the overwhelming number of vacancies within the support agencies, because I think that the vacancies and the inability to provide the service is what should lead, and the rate structure is what should follow from that. You know, we want to make sure that it's, as you say, it's about services, it's about effectiveness, it's about dealing with the people. The money's got to follow, you know, and presumably should in an obvious way once you get to that. We can have some quick discussion here. I know we're very tight on time, but I provide this certainly as information and want to be able to give everybody a chance to go through it in considerable detail. I know you, maybe you had a chance to look at it since the packet went out a little while ago, and if there are questions or comments other than that one, you know, I'd be happy to entertain you at this point. Yeah, and we will be, of course, being able to, I mean, this is an important part of our retreat is to get to this. And by the way, we're also trying to make sure that we offer time at the retreat for public interaction as well. It won't just be the first few minutes.
I don't think we need to do this tonight, but at the retreat, I would like to know what changes we are making in our priorities. I'm not going to be judgmental about those, but I would like to know what we're changing, if we're making any changes, because the people who are going to be answering those, I think, should know that there are, and that we should make it plain that those exist.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea and point. Of course, when I went through this, I was using a nice software package that showed all the changes, but they're not here. It would be really valuable to have a little one-page highlight of you know, what the substance is. I know. I think I do. I'll have to. I hope I don't have to take that as my own action item, but I will attempt to do that. That's a really great suggestion. Yeah, I may be able to just do a compare between this one and that one. If you could send me your latest version of this one, I'll put it up comparing it to the same
one. If you have one with Mark Cruz and additions.
Exactly, but we need to go back and recover that, so to speak. I think that's a really good idea. Other comments, questions on that one at this point? Okay. The next one, item C, there is a draft three-year plan in our packet here. This, again, is for information. We will be talking about this and attempting to give approval at the November meeting. I haven't had a chance to go through and look very much at the changes. I don't think there are a lot of substantive things. There are some subtle wording kinds of changes, but we will want to go through those. Strategic planning retreat. Again, we have our packets for that retreat here, and there's some planning information in your packet this evening as well that you should look at. Integration transition successes. I know that we may have some potential reports, and we have a little bit of documentation here. Lynn, can you kick that off a bit and review some of the things we have here, and we'll open it up for anybody who has anything.
Well, this packet has all of the agency's FY 2015 performance measures, outcomes, reports, and and a summary of all the data that they provided throughout the year on demographics and zip codes. And then the very final report is one that I put together. It takes a little while. I probably need need different software to do this a little bit more efficiently. But all of the agencies provide me the names of the people served so that I can go through and find a true number of unduplicated participants in programs. And I can also identify overlaps in program involvement. Sometimes people are moving from one program to the other and you don't get that information in this overlap. So if you have questions about some of this data, I probably already have the answer, just didn't include it in this report, or can check on my database and figure it out. But anyway, the performance measure reports that came from the agencies are exactly as they were submitted. They report according to the deliverables that they identify in their contracts at the beginning of during the application. And then some are negotiated. This year we negotiated a few changes. But I think it's nice for you just to be able to see it in their own words.
Okay, thanks. And I did ask Lynn to go ahead and give us a pie chart, just relative populations by zip code, so we get a sense of the balance here. So I guess we kind of jumped ahead a little bit. Do we have any reports of integration transition successes? We heard about the Employment First program, which I think is a really interesting way. And my sense, by the way, at the Disability Expo is that those employers were actively engaged and appreciated receiving those awards. That was certainly my sense of it. Any other reports from that? Okay, Dale.
It's positive, and I guess it's to make my point, because next month our clinical staff will be, more of our clinical staff will be back here to talk about more of those successful transitions. But one of my neglected to tell you is, you know, we've been working real hard for the last few months to open the Dunbar home. That's the four-person home. The home for four people in Muhammad. But again, because of the staff shortage, one, we were so close. We got to have four LPNs because of the medical needs of one person. It has to be staffed with an LPN 24 hours, 7 days a week. We were almost to the point until a few weeks ago here when the staffing became more critical to say, can we go ahead and open it for the three people and wait for the fourth person until we get the last LPN? But now with these staff vacancies, again, we can't keep our current search. So you've got real people waiting. Everything's in place. The house is in place. The rates are in place. The home's been, all the furniture's in there. It's ready to open. But that's, I've mentioned, so that's a successful transition as soon as we're fully staffed. And so it's great that we've got an alternate service provider, an IAG trying to open home. But again, we're all going after the same pool. And so it's some of our people are going to get staffed in one home or the others, and how do you meet that? And so that just needs to be real, that we're all out there, whether it's Charles CTF or residence developers, we're all community, we're all competing for the same type of person to get come work with our people. So we'll get there. We just need to get it staffed.
Chuck.
Jennifer Knapp from Community Choices again. Just have a couple of stories to share on the community living side. So one, we have a young woman who was living with a couple of friends, and that was not working so well. And so we were able to actually help her move into her own apartment. It was quite a battle because she just receives SSI. That's her only income. And most apartment owners want you to have 2 to 3 times the rent in your income. So we went through quite a few landlords, but finally found one that we could say, I promise she's going to pay her rent. So that was a fun experience. And then the other is a young man who has just moved out of his family home for the first time. His family lives in Rantoul, and he's moved to a house in Champaign and is learning how to navigate the bus system. He has a volunteer job right now at the Habitat for Humanity Restore. And so he's just learned how to navigate that on his own. This week was the first time he went by himself, so it was a very exciting moment. And he has a couple roommates. They have just learned how to navigate a yellow jacket infestation, so by calling the landlord. So all kinds of wonderful things to learn, but both of them are pretty excited in their new homes.
Thanks. Any others? All right, great. I think we're on to old business now. And Barb, can you tell us all about the expo? It's time.
The 9th annual expo is over. It was a great day. I think everything really for the most part went very well. We had 98 exhibitors that were there. We actually could have had about 10 more, but had to turn a few away just because of the lateness of when they came in. Excuse me. You know, we had a day full of people seeking and getting information. Some wonderful entertainment. We had our theme this year was amazing service dogs, and we had finally, we've been trying to get service dog organizations for several years, and this year we had two of them. We put them on stage, and they were very well received. We had sled hockey demonstrations, all kinds of stuff. Really good entertainment, kids' activities. We had, I'm not sure exactly how many artists, but we had 28 tables full of artists' work. So very busy in that area as well. We have our new resource book, as Phil pointed out. And I would just say if anyone would like copies of these, additional copies for your agency or organization, please let me know and we'll get them to you. We do have some extras because that's something, this is something that is used all year long. We want it out there. So let me know about that. I just want to say also that we got some really nice sponsorships in this year. That seemed to go, I think a little smoother than in the past. So really happy about that. And I just want to say also that the awesome steering committee that is about 25 or 30 strong just is amazing. I mean, those guys got in there and made it happen. I want to thank all of them. I want to thank the board members that were involved. Judy was hauling stuff. I mean, it's crazy. All you guys just really appreciate all of the support that we got in making this thing a success. I do want to mention, first of all, I'll let you know, we did receive exhibitor and participant evaluations, which I will have a summary of available next meeting for you. Right now, they're kind of spread all over my kitchen table, and Jim's got the exhibitor ones, and so we're working on those. But it looks like we had a pretty good response. I know I counted like over 200 participant evals, which is, I think, higher than we've had in the past, so that was really good. Also wanted to mention that we are, this is kind of the first year, other than doing sending out pledge letters that to businesses and such, that we tried our hand at some fundraisers. And, we had our wine tasting back in June that was very successful. And we actually, during the expo, we did a 50-50 drawing. And we, did the Ebert Fest ticket sales. The 50-50 drawing, I just wanted to mention that an organization that received that, the gal that won that is turning that back over to their organization's camp fund for kids special needs. So really, that was a neat thing to hear. We are currently, I passed those out, and if you didn't get one, they're on the table over here, but We are in the midst of the doing a Schwann's Cares fundraiser, and this is the Schwann's ice cream. Everybody likes ice cream, okay, but there is a code number on here, a five-digit code, and if you are currently a customer of Schwann's, or you want to be, you know, call or do your order online, and the expo will receive 20% of the sales. So it's just a, you know, one more way to help bring in some additional funds to our efforts. The other thing we're doing is we're doing the Community Day sale through Bergner's. The $5, these books sell for $5. The sale is November 11th to the 14th. And our organization keeps the entire $5. So it's a win-win situation. If you can help us sell any of these, you want to buy one, please, yeah, there's some over here, let any of us on the committee know, and we'll make sure that happens. So that's it. Questions?
No, just a comment. Barbie did a great job again this year.
Thank you.
And I'd like to formalize that on behalf of the committee. Thanks so much, Barb, for all your work.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And certainly acknowledge the rest of the committee as well. I mean, Barb's not the only one. She's she's the chief victim, so to speak. But there's a lot of good help that's really making that a big success. Thank you. All right. Most of the announcements that I had for the board I made in my remarks at the beginning. Any other board announcements or other things to bring up? Sue, are you healing, Sue?
I'm still here. Thank you.
Yeah, but are you healing up?
Oh, am I healing? Yeah, a little slower than I would like, but I'm healing.
All right. We're glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Any others? Okay, hearing none, I'll take a motion for adjournment. Moved and seconded. Those in favor can acknowledge and then depart. All right, I hear no objections. Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for this evening, and we will see you next week.
Thanks.